Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
Now, 250 million years ago, before Jurassic Park and all that, the Earth was on fire. But if you look at the fossil record, there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence of that. Now, new research coming out of Scotland is uncovering tiny traces that tell that story. Joining me now is Dr. Clayton McGill, Associate Professor of Biogeochemistry at Heriot Watt University. Clayton, welcome to the programme. You have the honour of being the first person from Heriot Watt University on the programme. Tell us a little bit about this time and what was going on our planet. This is 250 million years ago, as I say, before dinosaurs and all that sort of stuff. What was the world and who and what was inhabiting this world?
We were in a time called the Early Triassic. The world was defined by the supercontinent Pangaea, which meant that the continents were jammed together and they created a fairly unique global landscape where climate was maybe less variable than it is today. As you look across the land surface, what you're going to see is a plant life dominated by what we call gymnosperms. They look a lot like Christmas trees, but they're sort of very ancient Christmas trees. And mixed in with those is a lot of ferns.
Really? That's it?
That's really it. There was not much diversity in terms of plants. It was fairly unexceptional, at least by today's standards.
Wow. It's kind of crazy to think about that. It almost sounds like an AI version of Lapland or something. So Pangaea, just before we go any further, Pangaea is sort of all of the land masses that we currently have on the planet all mushed together. And over the last 250 million years ago, they've sort of drifted apart to create the continents that we know now. Does that mean that Pangaea itself took up only was almost like a giant island, but most of the rest of the planet was just water?
That's exactly what it means. Most of the planet was water. The oceans in between continents now were actually pushed out to the outside of that continent, meaning that you had essentially a big island.
Wow. And so what do we know about what was happening during this period of time, and how do we know that?
What we know about it is that the climate was generally warmer, but it was a period of climate inconsistency. We had some major changes, which is why it's so interesting to compare to climate today, where we're seeing changes in CO2. The early Triassic had generally higher CO2 levels, but partway through, those CO2 levels started to decline. We think that's part of the reason that we started to see so much more fire in the early Triassic, whereas before that and after that, there wasn't so much. There was something about that climate scenario, something that might be scarily analogous to what we're coming to in our own future, happening that led to the fires on Pangaea.
So the question you're trying to explore is, why were there no fires at this particular time? What could it not just be that it was just a lot colder?
That's one idea. So the question of fire is quite complex. Part of the question is answered by, was there actually fire or not? The other question is, are we looking in the right place to see the remains of that fire? Hmm. Generally speaking, scientists look for what most of us look for when we talk about fire, which is char or charcoal. However, there's a variety of reasons that charcoal might not be in the geological record, from purposes like when you burn ferns, you don't get much coal or you don't get much charcoal afterwards. Or, for instance, it all dissolved away because of some kind of chemical condition. So what we decided to do was look for the molecules that make up the charcoal. And lo and behold, there they are. Whenever we look at a lot of other geologic archives using molecular approaches, we find a lot of things that we expect to see, but were otherwise invisible. So much time and so much change has taken away the big charismatic fossils that we often look for, leaving us with molecular fossils.
So you're essentially looking for these biomarkers of fire within the fossil record. And before we talk about those, before 250 million years ago, is it easy enough to find evidence of fires in charcoal, or is it trickier the further we go back?
It's trickier the further we go back, but there is more evidence prior to the early Triassic for fire, which is why it was so strange that there was no fire occurring during the Triassic. If it's there before and after, why didn't it occur during that time?
Right. And so what are the reasons that you're kind of toying around with, and why is this of interest?
So we're interested in the fire component, for one, because it links the Earth's surface with the atmosphere and the deep ocean. It's what leads the carbon cycle that we call it now. It's how the molecules that we release into the sky, things like CO2, are eventually reabsorbed by the Earth. Fire is a great way of taking things on the surface and turning them into gases. And those gases then go up into the atmosphere where they fall back down to the ground or float around in the atmosphere indefinitely. And so understanding where fire happened, when it happened, and why it happened helps us understand things like CO2 sequestration. It helps us understand why the oceans are productive, why plants exist, why animals exist. And it's all linked to this fire and spreading of CO2 in a weird way.
This is around the time of what was known as the Great Dying, right?
Yes,
where there
indeed.
Was severe mass extinction, and 96% of animals in the oceans and 70% of animals on land essentially disappeared. So
exactly.
We think that's because of volcanic eruptions, right? These giant volcanic
that's one
events.
Idea.
But surely that would lead to a lot of fire that we would then see quite a lot of this, because from this study, it seems that you're seeing traces of charcoal, but not an enormous buildup, what you might expect for an event like this, right?
Exactly. So the leading hypothesis for a long time has been that there were large volcanoes, not on Pangaea itself, but nearby. They belched large amounts of volcanic gases into the atmosphere that then played chaos with the climate and with the animals living in the ocean and on land. However, as we start to look at the evidence more closely, some of the things that you say come to the forefront. If this was really driven by volcanoes, why aren't we seeing any volcanic dust in any of the fossil records? Why aren't we seeing any evidence of volcanoes? Furthermore, if the volcanoes aren't responsible, what was making the fire otherwise? Where did it come from? How did it exist? And those are the questions we're starting to dig into now. One of the more interesting aspects of this all is that most people, myself included, tend to associate fire with hot temperatures and dry conditions. And that doesn't have to be the way it is.
Really?
Another way that you can get fire is you can actually have cool, dry conditions, but a seasonal change where we sort of have a warm season and a dry season, summer and winter, or warm and cold, rather. And what you can do is start to have plants grow in the warm season. They then die in the autumn. And then in the winter, when it's drier, things like electricity from thunder and lightning, well, just lightning, I guess, not thunder, can actually spark these fires and let, you know, wildfires run rampant. So what we're trying to do now is figure out what started the fires, which you can also find biomarkers for. There's this molecular legacy of things like electrical fires.
Wow. And you can actually see electrical fires, the evidence of electrical fires in fossil records 250 million years old?
Amazingly, yes. It's the same tools that we use in forensics now to understand whether a building burnt down because of an electrical fire, a gasoline, or some kind of, you know, gas explosion. You can actually look at the compounds that have been produced during the combustion, during the burning, and they will tell you a story about what started that fire. So we're now looking for places that don't just have the end of the process, the leftover coal or charcoal, but we're looking for the places that have the molecules that started with that fire as well.
I mean, I've heard of looking for needles in a haystack, but you're looking for like a crack of lightning across a continent that doesn't exist anymore and is 250 million years old. I mean, how on earth could you possibly find the lightning rod essentially of the Triassic period? Like, how is that even possible?
It's a big ask, and I have to admit some of it is luck. However, luck favors those that are prepared. So what we're starting to do now is work with other scientists in other disciplines, paleontologists that just look at fossils. They look at fossils of bones and plants, but they can also find fossils that I don't really think about, like small-scale fires, things called clinkers, where you actually get small fires in the ground. So we're working together with these paleontologists to find macroscopic fossils that might give us evidence at the microscopic or molecular level about where these fires started and how they started.
Wow. Wow. I mean, like, that would be, I mean, I don't know an enormous amount of geology, but I feel like if you managed to crack this, this would be a pretty major finding. So it's really exciting, I'd imagine, from you on a personal level.
It would rewrite history books.
But you're also looking at sediment samples from Svalbard, the Norwegian Arctic archipelago that has the global seed vault. What are you doing with those samples and what are they telling you?
So those samples are actually what we're linking with the fire. What we did was we found a location from 250 million years ago that allowed sediment to build up on Pangaea. That site has now moved around because of plate tectonics, and we were able to trace that using models, computer models. We then found this location through a computer model, went to Svalbard, and were actually able to dig up some of the sediment based on geologic maps and use those sediments to understand what the world looked like 250 million years ago in what is now Svalbard, but at the time was quite a bit farther south. Rather than being at 75, 80 degrees north, it was quite close to where Scotland is now.
Yeah, I find it absolutely crazy. On this program, we were talking about, you know, plate tectonics and things moving around. And the idea that, you know, Valentia Island, for example, in County Kerry, was at some point at the equator. It's kind of crazy, particularly if you go to Kerry during the winter. The idea that was once an equatorial landmass is absolutely bonkers. So all of this changed. I mean, it makes your job that much more tricky to figure out, because, of course, you have to, you know, you have to put the pieces back together in the puzzle, as well as mapping these once in a lifetime lightning strikes to try and find the record. Dr. Clayton McGill from Heriot-Watt University in Scotland, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you too.